everyone. Welcome back to Be Honest. You are talking with your favorite podcast host, Sandra. And I just want to say welcome back to the people who have already listened to the other podcasts or the other episodes. And if you just clicked on this title or this episode because you thought it'd be interesting, thank you too. So actually, this would be the fourth episode because the last couple episodes were about toxic relationships and those are broken down into three different parts. So this is a whole different topic. I just want to let everybody know that you do not have to listen to any of the episodes in order. You can click around and listen to different topics or come back to other ones. The only episodes that you'll have to listen to in order are the ones that have different parts. But other than that, you should be fine clicking around, finding one that interests you, or whatever the case may be. So this topic today that we will be talking about specifically is Black mental illness or African American mental illness, however you want to put it. And I think that this topic is very important and that not a lot of people address this topic. This one will probably be broken up into several parts because there's a whole bunch to say about this topic. There's so much to cover, and I want to make sure that I elaborate specifically on this topic because it's very important. It's very, this is something that needs to be out there, and it needs to be informative, and it needs to be correct. So I want to make sure that I don't say anything, any false information, or I want to make sure that I elaborate definitely on this topic. So let's jump right into it because, you know, guys, I love to just start in the topic, dive right in head first. So we're going to go right ahead. So I just want to start with I just want to start with a little bit of an excerpt that I found that I think is really important to include into this topic. It's called Mental Illness in Black Community from 1700 to 2019, A Short History. And this is posted on a website called The Black Past. No, they are not donating or anything or just keeping this podcast going. They're a whole separate different website. I just want to mention that. I think it's really important. I just wanted to, of course, talk about this website because I thought it was good to mention. It was posted on March 11th to 2019, and it was contributed by a woman named Yuchenna Yumet. I'm so sorry if I said that incorrectly, but if you know what the name is, be it, of course, you know, correct me or whatever you need to do. So when I first scroll down the page, there's actually this picture and there are four different categories and four different parts in this picture. And there's a person or a man or a woman kind of like not standing there, but just the head of the person. And inside the head, in the four categories, it reads racism, discrimination, violence and poverty. And then directly in the middle, it says stressors on diverse ethnic racial groups. And these are mental health disparity factors. So I want to make sure that we cover all four of these categories because they definitely do contribute to Black mental health and the discussion. And under that, under the mental health disparities, it reads, members of ethnic and racial minority groups in the U.S. face a social and economic environment of inequality that includes greater exposure to racism, discrimination, violence, and poverty, all of which take a toll on mental health. And this is by the U.S. Surgeon General, which is really important to mention because, you know, this is a very important person and they definitely do know what they're talking about. So after that, I'm just going to read a little excerpt. Of course, I'm not going to read you the whole thing. You can read the whole thing if you want to. You can do that on your own time or you can do it while I'm talking. Whatever really floats your boat, whatever makes you feel the most comfortable. So it says in this little paragraph in the very beginning that in 1848, I just want to give you all just a little bit of history because I think there is a good thing to set a foundation for what we're about to talk about. So in 1848, John Galt, a physician and medical director of the Eastern Lunatic Asylum in Williamsburg, Virginia, offered that blacks are immune to mental illness. Okay, let's pause right there. It says that blacks are immune to mental illness. So already in 1848 is early in this period, way back then, they're already setting a tone for black people on what mental illness is for them. So saying that other cultures, other races are not immune to mental illness, but specifically blacks are. And we're going to get into that on why that is. So after that, it reads, Galt hypothesized that enslaved Africans could not develop mental illness because as enslaved people, they did not own property, engage in commerce, or participate in civic affairs such as voting or holding office. The immunity hypothesis assumed, according to Galt and others, at that time that the risk of lunacy would be highest in those populations who were emotionally exposed to stress of profit-making, principally wealthy white men. So let's break that down a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I think that it is really important to break and understand exactly what these people are saying. Because if you did not understand, if you did not get it, if you're just like, what? That makes no sense. I'm there with you. But I definitely do want to get into this piece by piece. So I already talked a little bit about the blacks are immune to mental illness. And then it says, Galt hypothesized that enslaved Africans could not develop mental illness because as enslaved people, we're going to highlight that as enslaved people, people who had the most stress, people who did the most labor, people who were setting a foundation for this economy, for enslaved people who were getting beaten and their children taken away from them and experiencing the most trauma, could not develop mental illness. So you could understand already who this was coming from, who this person was already, to say that these people who have gone through an existential amount of trauma was immune to mental illness because they did not own property, engage in commerce, or participate in civic affairs such as voting or holding office. So John Galt specifically was already saying that they could not have mental illness because they did not own property or they did not have the stress that comes with owning property or being wealthy. The only people who could get mental illnesses were people who had wealth, people who had some high stress within their own kind of world. If you weren't a person, they did not think of enslaved people as people. So if you were not what they refer to as people, you cannot get mental illness. So therefore, they already thought that enslaved people who have the highest traumatic experiences could not get mental illness. So that's already a foundation. They're already setting in the groundwork of mental illness. So I actually watched a TED Talk because I just wanted to do a little bit of research before I even went in on this topic as hard as I'm about to go in. I watched a guy named Philip J. Roundtree on YouTube for a TED Talk called Black Mental Health Matters. And if you want to go check that out, if you want to pause this, go check that out and come back, then you are certainly welcome to do that, because he was such a big help on trying to understand the mindset of Black mental health and trying to understand why Black mental health is not as acknowledged and accepted as other races are, specifically white people. So he kind of touched on trauma history to the present. So we have so much trauma from slavery and so much trauma from Jim Crow and civil rights and human rights and from even from now and from police brutality. There is so much, not even just, there's so much general Black trauma that's happened, so much generational trauma that's happening currently and ongoing that we are experiencing as an African American culture, as we're experiencing as a people. So that can cause a bunch of mental illnesses that we are not acknowledging, specifically in our own culture, in our own society. And it's still happening where we're not acknowledging this. So as he was talking about it, I kind of just want to talk about not just trauma history, but I also want to talk about how all of these things are being suppressed. All of this trauma is not being acknowledged. So if your trauma, if all of these things, like they're in history books and in museums and people are talking about it, of course, but we're not acknowledging what it has done. We've acknowledged what it has done to people physically and biologically and through, and how it has changed the economy and changed rights and all these existential and all these things that you can see, that you can touch, that are there, how it changed all of those things. But we're not talking about how the psychological impact that has on our people. We are not talking about the mental states that has left so many people in. And we're not acknowledging how none of those things have ever been taken care of. There's no therapy for it. There's no kind of therapy for these generations. And so, and for it to be kind of ongoing, it seems like it's never ending. There's so much of a psychological and mental impact that it's kind of crazy. So now that I've talked a little bit about the trauma history and the present and how not just the specific things are getting to our people, but the more general things, I'm going to get more into specifics, definitely specifics, because that's just a really a much bigger piece to the puzzle than we are that we aren't addressing. So like civil rights, Jim Crow, slavery, we have never gotten the closure or the help or the therapy that we needed to completely move on for things. Like, how can you move on from those kind of things? Because there's so much trauma that just hasn't been addressed in our society, period, and what it has done to our people. There, of course, there's going to be a lot of other things within the Black community that isn't going to be addressed. So the next thing I'm going to move on to is Philip J. Roundtree also talked about Black men and suppression and anxiety and depression. So there is something called the DSM, and a lot of psychologists use it to diagnose people with different mental illnesses. So there's like for schizophrenia, anxiety, for sexual disorders, for depression, like the DSM, specifically the DSM-5, that criteria is used to diagnose people. But the thing is about the DSM-5, who are we diagnosing? Okay, who is the DSM-5 for? Of course, there's going to be general and basics to these certain disorders and these certain mental illnesses that you're going to look for and to see if these people meet this criteria of this mental illness. There are going to be basics. There are going to be things that you want to look for in every single person. But also, mental illness is, it can look different in everybody. And I'm going to talk about specifically in race. So there's so many statistics for mental health, but the statistics and the surveys and the quizzes are mostly directed to white people, to a European Americans. And so it does not cover people of the minority. It does not cover African Americans and Asian Americans and Native Americans and Hispanics and Latinos. It does not cover them also. It specifically focuses on the white population. It is specifically written by them and for them, instead of for the African American population that we're talking about right now. So even though these are the identifiers for them that you'll be able to see in their society and in their culture, it looks different in our culture. Some of those mental illnesses may present themselves differently. So Philip J. Roundtree talked about Black men and mental illnesses and how that may, and how anxiety and depression may not look like you sitting in bed and crying and looking at the wall or whatever the case may be for days, or just you being quiet or isolating yourself socially or not being interested. Like, these are some of the criteria, some of the things for depression and anxiety, but it doesn't mean that's what it's going to look like in every single race and every single culture, because every single race and culture has different traumas, has different societal acceptances. So you sitting in bed all day and not doing anything in most Black people's homes is not going to be acceptable. That is not something you're going to be able to do. Like, your mom's going to tell you, like, you better get your behind out of bed and go downstairs and go to school, because you have no business just laying around my house, whatever the case may be. So they're going to get you up. You're going to have to do something. You're going to have to keep going on with your day, even if you feel like there's something else wrong. And that seems wrong, but that's culture. Like, you are not allowed to just mope around all day, especially if you have school or you have responsibilities and things where you can't just mope around all day. So that may come out, anxiety and depression may come out in anger. And stay with me on this one. I know that we're kind of going all over the place, but there is definitely a point that Black men suppress a lot of their anxiety and depression, a lot of their traumas, a lot of their emotions, because it is not acceptable in our race, is not acceptable in our culture for Black men to show their emotions. It is that you're seen as weak, or you're seen as a punk, or you're seen as, like, you're acting too feminine or female, or these different type of stereotypes and stigmas that are set for Black men, for and how for them to react in the kind of in our society, where all of these, they don't have as many healthy coping skills because of this, because people are telling them you cannot do these certain things, which would probably be the healthiest for them. Or no, you can't go to therapy. Don't do therapy. It's not going to work. Why are you telling people your problems? So they suppress all of these emotions. They suppress all of their feelings. And even though they may have, they suppress all of their trauma. So they may have depression or anxiety, but it looks like it doesn't fit the criteria of the DSM-5. It does not fit the criteria of what white people are looking for in these certain mental illnesses. So they take it as something else. A lot of times, if it comes out as anger, they'll be like, oh, this kid is just a rowdy kid. This kid is a bad kid. This kid is and they're not addressing that this kid may have actual mental illnesses or actual issues or actual traumas that's going on that are not being addressed. He's seen as something else. He's seen as a disturbance to society instead of a person who may need help or therapy or something or some healthy psychotherapies or whatever the case may be, or whatever they're not getting what they need to be able to cope with a lot of the disturbances in our culture and a lot of the trauma from either police brutalization, or they're not being able to cope with this because of something that's going on in the home, or maybe not having a father, or maybe not having or being in, what do you call it, the ghetto or the hood, in quotation marks, or being in places where they are stigmatized and they already don't have the opportunities as somebody else because of their skin color, because of their gender. So they're being seen as not as people with mental illnesses, but already being set with the name of being criminals. So that's why, like, jail houses are made, and there's such a large percentage of Black men in the prison system who have mental illnesses that are not being addressed because they do not fit the basic criteria of what white people say you should look like to have mental illness. And even if they do, let's say that these Black men have every single... Let's say they have depression and they have most of this, of the symptoms that are followed under the DSM-5 or in these textbooks, then what does the Black culture, what does Black society say about these men? Like, they're seen as weak, they're seen as punks, they're seen as people who can, feminine, people who cannot fend for themselves, you're not a real man. You have all these different titles that are connected to, let's say they do have this criteria, or even in a white society, even in the white culture, they will probably not be seen as much as a man, or they'll still be stigmatized and still be stereotyped as this person who is just trying to milk the system for unnecessary help. So anyway, so it doesn't matter pretty much how you flip the coin. They are still going to be stigmatized and stereotyped. And that's why a lot of times that Black mental health in general is not taken seriously, is not acknowledged. Also, not just Black men. Like, that's just the first part. It's just the meat and the potatoes of what we're getting into. But also Black women. I definitely, as a Black woman myself, I definitely want to talk about other Black women and how mental illness is affecting them also. So there's just so many different factors that it's hard to pinpoint and discuss every single one, because there's so much that goes on for Black mental illness not to be discussed, for not to be acknowledged, that it wouldn't even take 30 minutes of this episode. I'm so serious. It would take hours, because there are people who will be able to explain it better than me. Black psychologists, Black mental health people, case managers, social workers, people who work in the prison system, politicians, like, there's so many different factors, y'all. That is crazy. It's really crazy. And I'm sorry if this is not as organized as you would think it would be, but my head is talking, especially talking about Black mental illness, is like, it's like this, it's like that. It's so much going on. It's so cluttered because it's such an important topic. And such an in-depth topic where you kind of have you have to cover all the bases for people to understand why Black mental health is so important to recognize and acknowledge. So I am going to keep discussing this topic, because this is not going to just be the last of it. We are definitely going to have a part two to this topic because I think it is important for us to get a little bit more in depth into Black mental health illness and generational trauma and why this needs to be recognized now, or the future generations are going to be even more in trouble, especially what's happening right now, especially the time, especially the psychological impact that it's had on the past, the present, and will probably have on the future. So let's get this in. Thank you for listening to part one of Black mental health illness episode. And I can't wait to see you in part two. So keep listening, keep being interactive, keep pausing, keep looking up videos and more information about the topic, because even if I'm not explaining it to my best ability, you're getting the gist of it. You're getting a lot of information right now that you can build up on. So please do not just take these topics and be like, hey, oh, that was cool, that was nice. Like, actually read, actually go out and set out to find more information about this topic. I want you to think about it. I want you to discuss it with your friends. I want you to discuss it with your family. Like, have these conversations more often, especially now that you have the time to have these conversations, to sit down and actually bring it in, to actually acknowledge and to reflect and to just soak this information in. Do it. Do it. Because it's not that difficult, I promise you. And you will be better informed about these topics if you do so. So do not just take everything that I said and be like, okay, fact, cool. No, look it up. Go deeper into it. Dive deeper into it. Because I want people to be more, I don't want people to be ignorant. And I know that is sort of, feels like a harsh word, but it just means not knowing. Seek more knowledge. Become smarter and better people by seeking more knowledge, by gaining more education, because that's how we become better as a society, better as a people, better as a race, better as a culture. That's how we do it, by seeking more knowledge so that we understand other people and understand other topics. So thank you for listening, and I'll be back in part two.